Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we watch Blizzard and its many games like a giant cyclopean eye staring down at you from the void. I'm Matt Rossi, I'm the host, and with me this week are two fantabulous co-hosts. They literally would be willing to be shrunk down and go on a journey. They're that good. First up, she's here pretty much every week. Does everything, is kind of amazing, sort of terrifying. You never know what she's going to do. She's like some kind of Janus faced goddess of duality. It's Anne Stickney. Anne, what have you been up to this weekend?
Well, nothing as exciting as what you just said.
I like to give you an intro.
I'm mostly knocking out old achievements. Like that's what I've been focusing on, is just knocking out old achievements. I don't know why. I really don't. That just, for whatever reason, collecting mounts mostly. And then I played the trial for Mass Effect Andromeda, which has nothing to do with any Blizzard games, but I was playing that, and I feel like I should admit I was playing that. So.
Oh yeah, I think a lot of people have been. I mean, I think a lot of people at Blizzard probably are. Oh God, when is this coming out?
A lot of people.
Yeah. So yeah, that's. When I could play, I did. I had, my weekend wasn't conducive to anything other than panic. But also with us this week, he's the EIC of Blizzard Watch. He's the incredible artist, apparently. I didn't realize this until his concept drawing.
That's not true.
His concept drawing for the new zone came to life.
It's beautiful, Alex.
Alex Zubar.
That's also not true.
Well, you are Alex, so what have you been up to?
That is true.
Crafting new zones for us to experience.
Waiting for Andromeda, honestly. I was like excited, but not that excited. And then I played the trial through Origin, and okay, then I was for real excited. And I was like, I have to wait a whole week. And now it's almost here.
Yeah, I don't want to do a thing, that thing we do sometimes where we go on about another game for literally 20 minutes before we finally start talking about Blizzard stuff.
Yeah, just basically everything I did for the last week was just me trying to burn hours until I could play the thing I wanted to play, is how I'll put it.
I understand. But I will say this much, though, about that game. It did a good job of recapturing the what is going on feel that you get with a new franchise.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, this wasn't a new franchise. It's game four. I mean, you know, you feel like usually you do that kind of thing and you're like, yeah, I've done it all before. I know how this goes. And they quickly dispense with that. It is something I think any game company could learn from. Take a page here. Look at this and realize, yeah, you can shake people up. You can make a new experience.
It's Mass Effect 1 again, except it's Mass Effect 4.
Yeah, it really did an interesting job of that. But all right, we're going to move on to top stories, because if we don't, you know, we're kind of failing you as a podcast. First thing I'm going to talk about anyway is the fact that if you knew about the Four Azeroth event in Heroes of the Storm, it's back unexpectedly. From what I understand, basically Heroes of the Storm had the Four Azeroth promotion where you went in, did a quest where it was 15 games. win 15 games as a Warcraft character? I know we did it, but I forget.
I don't think you have to. You don't have to win them. You have to play them.
It's 15, them. Though. It is 15.
Yes. All right, yeah. Play 15 games. You don't have to win them. My apologies. Mm-hmm. But you we did it. It was actually a lot of fun. I mean, I had a good time playing it. But the interesting thing about it was that, you know, it was almost month, I think. It was like February to March 14th or something like that. And I guess Blizzard accidentally ended it soon.
Like it was supposed to end at a certain time on a certain on that day, and it ended like a few hours earlier than expected. So there were people who were trying to get it like super last minute, and they couldn't do it.
I couldn't remember if it like ended a few hours early or if the end time was in the middle of maintenance.
Maybe that was it. I don't know. All I know is that there were people who were trying to get it, like scrambling to get it last minute, and they weren't able to get it. Since it happened that way, they decided to go ahead and just reactivate it for a little while. So you've got until the 26th, which is what, Saturday?
Yeah, today is the 20th, so it's next Sunday.
Sunday. So you got till Sunday to play 15 games. It doesn't take long, guys. Just like sit down and do it. If you haven't done it yet, do it. Don't wait until Sunday. Just do it.
The secret is too that you don't have to play them against other people. Just need to get some friends, and you or one of the people in that group needs to be playing Warcraft characters. It's the person who wants to get the achievement. Just get some friends and do a versus AI match. That's all you have to do. It doesn't have to be like an actual match against people, so you don't have to be worried that, oh my god, I'm terrible. I'm going to make everybody in my group unhappy, because it'll be like a versus AI match and no one will care.
And if you don't have friends, there are people in-game in Heroes of the Storm that are looking for... Heroes of the Storm has a chat system, and if you just ask around or you see somebody else asking, you can just be friends for the duration of your 15 games, and then...
There's a lot of people who, like, they're throwing up LFG for Azeroth Mount in the chat channel, like, immediately, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend doing that. Also, however, one thing I thought was fascinating that just recently happened, Diablo 3 is putting out its next season, which is not unusual. They do that all the time. But they're finally bringing it to consoles. So Diablo season play will finally be accessible to people who play Diablo 3 mainly on consoles. I had gone into like a renaissance of loving Diablo 3 again, because I think Diablo 3 works really well on console. It's one of the games you can argue back and forth about other games. Like, I mean, I like people like Overwatch on console, but Alex makes the point, and I've looked into it since, and he's right that there's more responsiveness when you play it.
Whoa!
Yeah,
back up.
Did you just say?
Wow!
Look, if you call attention to it, it'll never happen again.
I know
it's happened 6 times. I keep them burned into my soul as marks of shame. Oh, anyway,
okay. All right, moving on. Yeah,
but Diablo 3 is one of the games I actually think works better on console, because it has the dodge roll mechanic and is there on the console and not on the PC version. And it's really useful if you want to not take damage. But at any rate, for a long time, I played it like a lot. I played it all the way through Reaper of Souls. I did all the special side stuff that came out. I had played that game a lot. But then you come to a point where your character is max level and you're just doing the same riffs over and over again. And there's nothing else to do. I mean, on console, that happens faster because there was no seasons. They've had like, I think we're on season 10?
Season 10 is coming out.
And they haven't put out one of them for the console this whole time. So, you know, after a while, I just stopped.
Why didn't they put seasons on consoles? Apparently, do we know? Like, what was that? Was it a technical thing or?
According to the post, there were technical challenges to be overcome. And they didn't actually say these are the technical challenges to be overcome, to my knowledge. I mean, I read it and I didn't see anything like that. But apparently now they're just finally getting it together enough to put it out there. And I think that's great.
If, as I recall, I don't know, my knowledge of this goes back a console generation. I don't know if the current consoles are set up this way. But I know it was, Valve of Team Fortress 2, they straight up said what the problem was. TF2 got tons of free content on PC. On consoles, it didn't really get any, because to patch a game on consoles involved paying an exorbitant fee to Microsoft or Sony or whatever. So if Microsoft and Sony could independently verify the contents and of the patch and bug test it and so forth, so you had to pay a third party to verify your patch before you could release it. And yeah, when Valve was doing something like every month they were releasing them for free, they weren't going to pay Microsoft and Sony money to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case, because I know that at least on the Xbox, and I'm pretty sure the PlayStation does this too, there's been a huge push to make third-party apps and content download stuff work for the new stuff. Fallout 4 has gotten every patch that it's gotten for anything else has gotten for the Xbox. They are much more on top of it with the new consoles. I don't think that's currently the issue. I certainly don't think Blizzard would have put out seasons on console if they had to pay to a third party.
If that problem has been eliminated, then that's why you're getting seasons on console though.
Yeah, but I'll tell you though, it's a great addition. For all that, I think, you know, Diablo has seen a dearth of development lately. And the anniversary thing was really cool. I'm glad they did that. And I'm glad the Necromancer is coming. I think that's a good step in the right direction. But I'd like to see Diablo 3 get like an actual expansion or something. I think it really is either start working on Diablo 4 or put some stuff into Diablo 3, because it is a game that has really improved since launch. It's a solid, good action RPG game. That's what it is. I just said RPG game. That's so dumb, man. That's so ATM machine of me. But anyway, yeah, no, I'm happy about this. I think this is really good. What else should we talk about? We can talk about patch 7.2. It's not going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
It's not. We're not going to see it tomorrow, but...
It's in release candidate.
It is, yeah. The PTR really... The PTR version is an official release candidate, so soon TM, only you might even be able to ditch the TM at this point and say probably within the next few weeks here, we should see it on live servers. I'm kind of excited about that because there's a lot of new stuff in 7.2, and now that I've finished all the Nighthold stuff, I want to go do questing and things again, so I'm looking forward to going to back to the Broken Shore and, you know, finishing up all that stuff, also getting flying. That would be great.
I'll tell you, we were talking about changing up and doing stuff on the leveling stream, but if 7.2 dropped at a reasonable amount of time, I want to do that 5-man.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I want to do that 5-man a lot. It looks really interesting.
It looks pretty amazing, and I would love to do that.
I have seen one. I got to see a little bit of it on the PTR.
Okay,
and
well...
I'm not spoiling anything. All I'm saying is the snarkiness between the people who were there with you is a thing to behold.
Yes.
It is beautiful. And quite frankly, I'm going to say this. I kind of like Khadgar now. He is old dad Khadgar. He's old Dadgar, but I like him on that. I like that he is old Dadgar. It's not saying I don't want other characters to come back, but if I'm stuck with an old wizard, I like that he's trying too hard. I don't know what to say. It's like, you know, oh God, Khadgar.
Yeah, I don't think the problem was ever that Khadgar's character sucked or anything. It's just that they shelved a lot of other people for Khadgar.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Which kind of annoys me, but
I totally agree on that. But the voice acting is good, and I don't know, I thought it was good. But yeah, 7.2, I'm excited about it. I definitely want to do some of the invasion stuff. I'm actually more interested in the Legion assaults than I am the Broken Shore. I mean, I'll do the Broken Shore.
I want to do the Broken Shore because I want the class mount, because the Rogue one is real cool. It's a big raven. I mean, come on.
The Warrior one is kind of like a big dinosaur thing, and you'd think I'd be all over that, but I don't know. It just feels like, I feel like it should have like the bulwark of Azanoth on its shoulders or something. Just something that says Warrior, like, you know, it's completely covered in tank armor or something. I don't know.
Just cover thing in axes from like nose to tail tip. It's just axes everywhere with a saddle on it.
Aesthetic. Yeah. This thing ain't pointy enough. Oh,
I'm just
we got
a sucker
that
for Timeless Isles.
Yeah.
If it's what was that, Alex?
I'm a sucker for Timeless Isles and places. If it's just a big sandbox with stuff to kill, I'm there. That's my favorite thing.
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. And then I think that there's also like a storyline type thing involved too, which is good. And there's a dungeon, which is good. And there's a raid, which is also good. Like, there's all kinds of stuff in 7.2. It's a big patch.
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, 7.15 had quite a bit of stuff, but it wasn't a major patch. This is a major patch, so...
7.15 was the appetizer, and this is the meat and potatoes.
I'll say right now, too, one of the other things I like about this patch is that I'm actually not all that excited for raid transmog, like the raid stuff. I mean, I don't hate it, but it's the loot is all, like, you know, Burning Crusader-like gear, and I'm not that excited, because if I had that wanted that stuff, I already went out and got it. But the five-man dungeon has some of the nicest armor I've seen in a long time. And it's funny because it looks it's sort of just demon themed. Like, there's an armor set that basically makes you look kind of like a satyr or a dreadlord. It's stylized demon armor. And I like it. I think it looks really cool. The dungeon sets look nice. They have color variants that are distinct. Like, if you want a bright black and red suit, they've got that, or a green and black one. I haven't looked at like the leather or mail yet. The cloth one I thought was good. Like, I actually looked. This is, you will very rarely hear me say I liked this cloth set, and this is the time that I can say it. So that's exciting to me. I like when new transmog stuff comes.
Here's my issue. They decided to revamp the Black Temple sets.
Mm-hmm.
I want an updated tier 2. That's all I want. I just want updated tier 2. Because tier 2, in my mind, had some of the best armor sets, like the most iconic armor sets ever.
You know, that's why I was a little disappointed in the Warlords End Raid gear, because they were trying to evoke tier 2, but not actually redesign it.
Yeah. That didn't work for me.
It doesn't look right.
No, it didn't work for me. Straight up, the Rogue tier set in Tomb of Sargeras, it looks like Slayer, only it's like a high-res texture version of Slayer's armor, which is great and everything, except that that's not my favorite Rogue set ever. Actually, I don't even really like that one all that much. It's okay, but it's not my favorite. And the same goes for like the other classes. I think I liked the Warlock version, the Warlock set with the wings. That was a pretty cool looking set. And if I remember correctly, the Warrior one looked pretty cool too.
The Warrior set's good. Tier 6 is one of the better Warrior sets, but I honestly don't feel like what they did to redesign it looks fine.
Yeah.
But it's the same time, it also makes it look like overly elaborate in a way that it didn't look before. Like before, the real draw was the big spiky shoulders and the big spiky helmet. And right. Now we've also got the big spiky torso and the big spiky boots and the big spiky legs and, you know.
Shove some more spikes on it. And then stick you on a mount that's nothing but axes.
I am
with
Orgrimmar. Like, seriously, if you're an orc warrior wearing this, you could just go around going, "Hi, I'm Orgrimmar. How you doing?"
I haven't looked at these sets very closely. My only exposure is, I think I saw a tweet from Peculia through Wowhead, one of those. And it was the priest set.
Yes.
And I used to love that set. And the screenshot showed the priest set all like yellow and holy light-ish.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's wrong. That set is dark.
Well, they have sets for like they have a shadow looking set.
Okay.
Yeah, there's two versions. It's okay.
Because everything about that set is spooky. So when you put some holy light on it, it's broken.
And Vaiku in the chat channel points out that like the Hunter set, for example, it doesn't match the aesthetic of Tomb of Sargeras because it's Gronstalker. That was the set for Black Temple, and there are no Gron on the Broken Isles, which is a legit point. You know,
actually, the weird part's going to be when we get into Tomb of Sargeras and it's full of Gron.
What are they doing here? The problem that I have here, though, is like I said, they're going for this whole class identity thing, and none of the tier sets evoked that sense of different classes more than tier 2. Like, tier 2 paladin armor, that's a paladin. Tier 2 rogue armor, that's a rogue. You know what I mean?
Because tier 2 priest armor was not very inspiring.
It was Transcendence. Are you kidding me? That's my favorite set. It was like a stained glass window. It's beautiful.
It wasn't a very good... It was like just kind of turquoise and kind of weird.
It's like a cathedral window. I don't know. Like, an updated version of that would have been amazing.
It was like a stained glass window depicting nothing.
See, I'm just saying this, that tier 6 warrior, I mean, is almost universally acclaimed. Even... it's not my favorite, but I know like so many warriors are like, yeah, tier 6. Tier 6, is, you know, the Onslaught set is that for warriors. But I don't think a lot of the others, like the Paladin one, I don't know. Alex, you haven't seen the Paladin, the tier 6 lookalike Paladin set they've got. It comes in multiple colors, like a kind of seething red and a purple. And it's just, you remember how that set looked? Like it was lit from within.
Yeah, it was...
Imagine that, but
yellow.
Blue. Imagine that with bright purple coming out of it.
No.
Yeah, and
it doesn't work.
There's stuff I like and stuff I don't like, but I'm much more excited about the dungeon stuff because it looks interesting and new, and I kind of wish they hadn't
just
done
like
this revamp.
Your style editors today is what's going on.
get used to it, people. This is us.
We're just gonna talk about fashion like all day. But yeah, so 7.2 not coming out tomorrow, but maybe coming out the 28th. If not, I'm going to assume probably the 4th of April.
Yeah. The only thing else I had here, and if there's anything else you guys want to talk about, now's a good time to throw it out there. But there's a Nighthold had a tank balance issue that they basically addressed on the forums. And to break it down to a really quick and easy soundbite, Guardian Druids were the best tanks by a lot because of Markiverse.
Bears!
Yeah. And the reason is because they basically had the best anti-magic mitigation for the least resource cost. And both Prot Warriors and amazingly Vengeance Demon Hunters were having the problem. You didn't think... I was surprised by this. I was
the
thinking,
Demon
Vengeance?
Hunters were too?
Yeah, Demon Hunters were. And
usually
it's
the new class that's blowing everybody else out of the water.
Yeah, exactly. That was my response to it. I was like, Demon Hunters, really? Because Demon Hunters are pretty good tanks. I mean, there's... Obviously, they're the new hotness, and so whenever you have the tank class be the new hotness, people jump in and try and tank on them immediately who haven't actually figured the class out. So you get a lot of dungeon runs where like they just blow up and everyone's mad. But overall, a Demon Hunter tank who knows what he or she is doing can tank really effectively. It's just a question of like certain classes had better anti-magic mitigation than others, and because of the way that they're designed, the Guardian Druids have the best. And that's just, it's the best for the least resource cost. It's not just that it's the best. It's the best that they don't have to think about. Because they basically decide, am I going to be doing like magic mitigation or am I going to be doing something else? And the downside is they lose the something else. Whereas, you know, like a Prot Warrior has Spell Reflect, but it's on a longish cooldown. They can still do their normal stuff and they can hit Spell Reflect from time to time. But in this situation, there are certain fights where it's heavy magic damage all the time. The Guardian Druid pulls ahead. And Blizzard's basic statement on this is that they don't want to make tanks too samey. That they've had that problem in the past. They don't want tanks to play the same. They don't feel like they feel like having tanks do things differently and sometimes maybe a little better. Like maybe they're a little better on X. That's not really a problem as long as the other classes can still do it. But they're going to pay attention because they don't want a situation where people are actually struggling to get through a raid because of the tanks they have. And that's been the case for some people. So I thought that was interesting because we're going into a new raid, you know, coming up. And they've said they're not going to make any big changes because they're about to drop a new raid on people. And they don't want them to have to try and relearn how to do their class or suddenly have a tank who's less effective. So that's something to watch going into 7.2 is like how Nighthold has informed tanking balance and how we have anti-magic damage and how magic is damage is dealt with, how you have anti-magic damage, you know, things on your class. So that was basically it for me, guys. Do you guys see anything you want to talk about before we move on?
The only
BlizzCon
other thing.
BlizzCon announcement.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go. BlizzCon.
They announced BlizzCon last week, November 3rd and 4th. They didn't extend it to 3 days like some people might have expected. Still just 2 days. They may or may not get the expansion of the convention center. It's slated to complete at this around the same time BlizzCon is happening. Morheim suggested that they would use it last year, but whether it's going to be there to be used or not is kind of up in the air.
Yeah, so
if there is space there for them to fill, they will fill that space.
They announced the ticket times too, didn't they? Like when they're going on sale?
Mm-hmm.
April. So yeah, get ready for that, guys, if you're doing that. I know I won't be because, you know, I can't travel, but I'll be envious. So there you go. I will be sick with envy. So there you go.
BlizzCon will be going on. And I feel like I need to like reiterate for the record that 7.2 has flying in it. And I'm very excited about this. I don't know about you guys.
I don't care about flying.
I do.
Mean, I think
I've gotten to point where I'm tired of not being able to fly. It takes a while for me to get there, but when I'm there, I'm there. And I'm there right now.
I think you probably remember I got flying for Warlords many moons after they actually implemented it because
didn't we do
you guys
that on
had to,
the leveling stream?
Yes. You guys expected me to fly somewhere in the leveling stream, and I couldn't. So you guys had to take me around and get Pathfinding or whatever it's called.
Yes.
Trailblazing.
Yeah.
Pathfinder.
Pathfinder.
Okay. I was pretty sure that was it, but I was wondering if I had Andromeda on the brain because Pathfinder, but good. I just don't care about flying. Ground travel is fine for me.
I do, and I'm happy that we're going to be seeing it finally. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to the class mounts too. Anyway.
Alrighty, so I guess at this point we will do the emails that we do every week here on the show. If you have an email, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. put, you know, Blizzard Watch or the podcast in the subject line, because that makes it easier for us to know what podcast you want the email to be on. As is usually the case, Anne's going to be reading them for us, so if you take it away, Anne.
Okay, so our first email is from Sevatar, who says, "Greetings, Watchers 3. Quick question. Do you think Blizzard could improve the quote-unquote pacing of its content delivery? At the start of every expansion, we often hear that people are overwhelmed that there's too much to do, followed by periods of rattling around and doing the same old stuff. I'd personally be quite happy with the developers, quote-unquote, holding back content and drip-feeding it to us on a weekly basis, as opposed to the huge dump of stuff consumed quickly. Thoughts, Sevatar?" I'm going to jump in here real quick and say that I think the reason that a lot of people are overwhelmed right when an expansion starts is because there's a bunch of things to do right when an expansion starts. Like, you're starting out, you got to level. And once you're done leveling, there's all the end game stuff to there's a lot. There's a lot of new content. And that happens every time. I don't know why people feel overwhelmed by it, because it's just, you know, it's like, here's a gigantic pile of stuff to do. Go do it.
See, I think to a degree, I mean, we've all been playing and talking about World of Warcraft for a very long time now. I remember back in ancient Greece when we first started doing it, and we like did it out of a temple. No, seriously, though, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've seen the various ways Blizzard has done content releases.
Calculated DPS via Abacus.
Yeah, we've seen them do overwhelming dumps of content. That was Burning Crusade. Burning Crusade was literally nothing, 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 everything, nothing, 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 everything. And Wrath of the Lich King was very similar in that it basically just threw patches at you. Like, literally just, and it threw them at you at different alternating rates of speed, so you could never really be sure when you were going to get them. Like, you got Ulduar, and that was, like, you know, relatively, like, a few months after launch. And then you got, you know, Trial of Crusader right after Ulduar. And then you got Ice Crown Citadel, a good long chunk after that. And then you got Ruby Sanctum, which wasn't much, and that was thrown in at the end. And then you got nothing for a long time. And they've been going back and forth on this for years. I think that in terms of the highest rate of content patches they ever did, we're looking at Mists of Pandaria, where they were putting out content, like, it was like almost every 3 to 4 months something new would come out. Until, you know, we got the last raid, and then it was like a year and nothing. I think that's their real problem. It isn't necessarily that they overwhelm people with content. It's that they've yet to be able to do a thing where they give you content reliably over a long period of time.
Where they space it out correctly.
Yeah.
So you aren't sitting there for a year at the end of an expansion twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah, Mists of Pandaria looked like it was going to be great, and then they had that lull of a year where there was nothing. I mean,
if you cut that year-long stretch at the end of Mists of Pandaria down to like 4 months, it would have been the perfect expansion, period.
Or even...
The, like, overwhelmed at the start of every expansion, like, I just don't understand how someone is overwhelmed. Like, it's a new game. I want there to be a lot of stuff. If I get into a game, I look at it, I'm like, there's not much to do here. That is the most disappointing launch of a new game or expansion ever.
You want to have all of those things to do. That's what make, I mean, you're playing a game. You want the things to play.
Yeah. Delight me with the many and varied toys, please.
I'm going to actually say that I don't feel like Legion was overwhelming at all at launch. Like, it had content, and we were all glad of it compared after Warlords, where Warlords looked really great, and then it turned into like a Hollywood set, because it's like, you know, oh, that looks like a really great place to go, and you got there and everything is actually a facade and there's nothing there yet, and you're like, oh, so I guess I'm not just going to be doing that stuff up front for a while. Okay, I guess that's fine. And I think Legion really learned a lot from that. They learned how to do, like, you know, open world questing a lot better. The world quests are much more interesting than the, you know, go to a zone, kill a bunch of things, and fill a bar. They generally speaking, you know, Suramar is a triumph of max level game, open world gaming. It feels Suramar is, and for all that I have problems with Suramar City and you know, could burn certain sections of it to the ground and cackle in the flames, Suramar is like playing an Assassin's Creed game in World of Warcraft.
It's so, like, good.
They put another game in World of Warcraft that you can play with your World of Warcraft character. It seriously is an amazing thing. And I don't feel like Legion has overwhelmed me at all. I feel like Legion has basically been, here is enough stuff to do that even if you want to go play on an alt, you've got stuff to do on it. And if you don't want to do any of it, don't. You don't want to do Mythic Dungeons, don't do them. If you don't want to do World Quests, don't do them. but they're here. And if you want them, there they are. It's done a really good job of not drip feeding us. It hasn't been like, you know, gated or dripping, but they did, in fact, make us wait a good long chunk before we got Nighthold. Nighthold wasn't, technically speaking, a 7.15 release. It was still part of 7.0 in terms of its design. But they didn't give it to us. I think it was actually after 7.1 that it came out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And that was mostly just due to the fact that 7.0, on release, we had what? We had Emerald Nightmare, which was pretty lengthy. And then
and then they gave us Trial of the Valor halfway through that.
We got Trial of Valor, which was also, it wasn't, I don't think it was as lengthy. It was like a little minor raid, but it was still a raid. It was another raid piece of raid content. So,
And then they, you know, we got Nighthold with, you know, even though it wasn't part of 7.15 design wise, it came out with 7.15. So we've actually had three raids this expansion so far, and we're going to get at least one more.
And Nighthold was a big raid. I mean, Emerald Nightmare was pretty big too, but Nighthold's, it's a big raid. There's a lot going on in there.
Nighthold's about as big as the previous two raids put together. Like, Emerald Nightmare is like, it's like seven or eight bosses all told, I think.
I think 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me. We've got a lot. We've had a lot come out. We've had a lot you could do. Dungeons like Karazhan, which is like a mini raid. I know Alex hates the mega dungeon thing, but, you know, there
mega
was
mega dungeon, mini raid.
Yeah. There's stuff that happened. I feel like they've done a decent job so far. We'll see how they do with 7.2, and we'll see how they do after it. I hope that if they've got the cycle going of like mini patch, mega patch, if they've got that cycle down, like 7.15, 7.2, 7.25, if that is done properly, we could be finally looking at the expansion that doesn't make us wait a year at the end.
That's what we have to see.
Yeah.
After, you know, 7.3, Argus, whatever, if we have a year after that, they didn't really fix anything.
No.
Yeah, we'll for see. For me, I don't know if we're even going to have a 7.25 because they said 7.2. We have a hint towards 7.3. Like they said, Argus is 7.3. But they didn't say if there was anything coming before 7.3 or it's just going to be like Argus after that. I do like this idea of the mini patch thing. And I think that 7.15 was really successful in that aspect that, you know, it introduced stuff without being really overwhelming. It was just like some cool new tidbits of things to do. And that made me happy that there was, I don't think we've seen those little patches like that since, I don't know when, forever.
It has a sort of vanilla feel to it.
A little bit, yeah, because vanilla.
You used to just get a dungeon, or now you can go here and do this.
1.1.12. You know, it was like, here's all these little tiny patches in between everything. You know, not every patch in vanilla was a major patch. And a lot of those little minor patches introduced just like little tiny things that didn't really have a whole lot to do with anything. But it was new stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Sevatar, I hope that answers your question. I mean, you just asked for thoughts, so we gave them to you. Did you have anything to add, Alex?
Nope.
Okay. We're going to move on. Next email doesn't have a name on it, but it says, "Hello, Captain Cold, Killer Frost, and Mr. Freeze." And I would like to pause for a moment and try and figure out which one of us is who here.
You are definitely Killer Frost.
Why am I Killer Frost?
It's gender. Killer Frost is the only woman.
Killer Frost is a woman, Captain Cold and Mr. Freeze are men.
Oh,
so
okay.
I mean, I guess we don't have to play. If you want to be Captain Cold, you can.
I've never heard of Killer Frost, so I'm just like in the dark.
Oh, here. Killer Frost is actually the coolest of the three of them.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I mean, that's a weird thing to have said about characters who all freeze things.
Make it a point to look that up later. All right, so the email says, "I have one question for you. How vast was the Night Elf Empire, and how many rulers did it have? We know of Prince Ferondus, Queen Ashara, Grand Magistrix Elisande, the Sunstriders, etc. Was the Elven Empire united, or were there multiple factions?"
It was united in that Ashara was queen and everybody else was under her.
Yes.
But it tended to have a sort of Byzantine structure where princes and principalities were like ruled by a powerful figure who then reported to the queen. There's more than just Ferondus. There were several princes. Like Prince Stratheldrin in Eldrathalos, he reported directly to Ashara. Like his group, the Shendralar, were a specific group that did things that Ashara wanted done, and their city was under him, then to her. You get that with Elisande, did that for Suramar. Ferran just did that for Azuna. There are others. There's one that's, I never remember her name, but she was in Warcraft 3. She gets mentioned. Like, they actually have to deal with her ghost, princess, and I can't remember what her name was, but she's,
oh my
she's
gosh.
One. Yeah, you
I know who
we'll
you're talking about, and I can't remember her name, but she, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, she was in Stone Talon.
Yeah. Is she in Stone Talon right now? Because I know that there's, like, Night Elf ruins in Stone Talon now.
I don't think she's ever made an appearance. Her actual name is apparently Azune.
Azune, okay.
Yeah, so it's, you know, Princess Azune. I just looked her up.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Azuna. So, yeah, but she was a Night Elf princess. You know, she was, she mocked an Oracle's wisdom and was punished, but she transformed into Living Stone.
Yep.
So she's in Warcraft 3. She makes no appearance in the game ever again. Like, she isn't in Warcraft.
She doesn't really need to, though, because she was a ghost when you dealt with her in Warcraft 3, so...
Yeah. World of Warcraft, is she's never popped up, but the point being, she was one of many of those kinds. There was a... Basically, if you look at the map of ancient Kalimdor, anything around the Well of Eternity that's even remotely desirable, the elves had or didn't want. Like, if it wasn't worth fighting the Mogu to get the stuff down in Pandaria, because that's way south.
But at the height of the Night Elf Empire, of the Kaldorei Empire, they had a giant chunk out of the middle. It wasn't just the area around the Well of Eternity. They had, like, a lot of the surrounding area as well.
Yeah. If you want another way to think about it, is if you look at the map of the world right now, any place where you go when there's a Night Elf ruin, they had. So the Hinterlands, they had stuff there, you know, which basically means the whole north of the Eastern Kingdoms, they had a big chunk of that. The,
it was
right
a giant
south of,
stretch. Yeah,
straight south of Stormwind, there's a big Night Elf ruin, big portal. That was also theirs. So,
and all that stuff that's currently underwater,
under
the Maelstrom, that was all Night Elf territory.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason that we're currently on the Broken Isles. No, it was all Night Elf territory. The whole bloody thing. I mean, huge, huge swaths of the planet. The only places they didn't have were places that they either decided they didn't want or didn't want to fight for. Like, they basically banished the Amani and Gurbashi trolls to their little sections of the world and were like, you stay there. Come out and we will punish you. And the trolls had nothing they could do about it. The trolls could not fight them. So you get
quite
that.
Get the whole magic thing. Yeah. The same level as the Kaldorei did.
Yeah, the only trolls who had any power at that time were the Zandalari, because they were united, but they were allied to the Mogu. And the Mogu were a tough chunk, because they were Titan-forged.
But they were down south. And...
Yeah, the elves were like, not really worth our time, that we have the well, let them do what they want.
We've got the well, we've got all this other land, it doesn't really matter. The way that it worked was, I mean, I guess you could kind of look at it, if you want to look at it in U.S. terms, it was kind of like a state. Like, you have the Night Elf state, and each state has, like, several different cities in it, and each city has its own mayor, but they all report to the governor, I guess, if you want to kind of look at it that way.
Or any like, satrapy from, like, you know, actual history. Like, the Roman Empire, you know, was ruled from Rome, but it had satrapies, and it had, you know, territories, and they had governors and so forth. It's basically the same system. You have a central ruler, and then that ruler has people who report to them, and the title that they used was usually prince or princess. Grand Magistrix was rare in that she didn't use prince or princess, but that's because her reign over Suramar was very much because she was a powerful magician.
It was magic-oriented, so. Yeah.
And the Sunstriders weren't actually leaders of anything.
No.
They were high-placed, they were well-placed highborn, but they weren't, like, in charge of anything. They were just, in fact, they were kind of the weirdos. Like, they were really into the sun, and they liked to color their hair. And everyone was like, why are you into the sun? We're night elves. He's like, but the daytime's so cool, man. They were like, honestly, they were like the Night Elf version of goths, because they were always out during the day when everybody else was sleeping, and they were always dressed in bright clothes and talked about the sun all the time. So they were like, you know, they were goths. They were they were opposite of their culture's, you know, normalcy.
Being up in the middle of the day because everybody else is asleep. It's nice and quiet. Nobody bothers you.
Yeah,
you could get so much done. Yeah.
But I do appreciate this question, because I was also curious about Prince Ferondus, because I figured prince implies some kind of lineage of rule. And I was like, but there's no...
No, I mean, there was a lot.
What is the relation here?
There was a lot of nobility. There was a lot of nobility, like people that were placed up in the higher portions of society, as it were. But it wasn't that they were, like, part of any particular lineage or anything like that. It was just they were in charge of this. It's sort of like calling him Mayor Ferrandis, or you know, Governor Ferrandis. You know, he had that particular section that he ruled over, but he reported to Ashara, and all of them reported to Ashara. All of them did. Yeah.
It's pretty much the way Machiavelli wrote The Prince, and he wasn't talking about the son of a king. He was talking about the head of a principality, of head of state, in much the same way. In terms of, like, heritage, I mean, like, there's the other thing that's weird about the elves is they actually had two nobilities. They had the old nobility who kind of predate the Highborn, and Lord Falconcrest is a member of that. Like, these guys were, like, when the Empire was coming up, they were the soldiers and the generals and the guys who put it in motion. But then the Highborn came up, and the Highborn were obsessed with sorcery because that's what Ashara did, and they wanted to emulate her.
She was so real keen on that.
Yeah, and so there's tension between these two groups. The high, like the older nobility, like Ravencrest and the others, still loved Ashara. Everybody loved Ashara. They couldn't help themselves, but they were like very suspicious of the Highborn, and the Highborn were like, why are you suspicious of us? We're just trying to be more like Ashara. And they're like, exactly. You shouldn't be. Only Ashara is Ashara. And
that was a big thing. She gets to be the best.
Yeah. So there's elves had that kind of thing going on.
It's a little bit different and kind of interesting. Anyway, the way that it worked and clicked together. And we don't have a lot of detailed history from that time period. We just have the stuff that you know, you can dig up with archaeology, or the stuff that was presented in the War of the Ancients books, or even Chronicle. Chronicle goes over some of it, but it doesn't have all of the details. Like, it doesn't tell you how many rulers there were exactly, or it doesn't even tell you who was in charge of the Night Elves prior to Ashara.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Keep in mind,
we still don't know.
They blew themselves up, and the people that took over after didn't like them.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to talk about them.
They didn't hang on to it. Everybody was all about Ashara. That's all they wanted to write about, talk about, you know, put in down in the history books. It was all her until it wasn't. And then there was nothing. So moving on. Next email. Next email is from Balaka Warrior on Dragonblight, who says, "Dear Watchers, now that we know that the Titans are all dead, Sargeras excepted, of course, what would have actually happened if we failed to defeat Algolon and he sent the order for reorigination? Thanks, Bellic."
I have a theory about this, but if you want to go first, go ahead.
No, please give me your theory, because I don't know.
Okay. All right, my theory is based on the fact that Neltharion Deathwing wanted to get into the Halls of Origination so badly. If you remember in Chronicle, there's a part where the Tolvir change the Halls of Origination to direct the origination effect in a localized area.
Which is why Uldum is a desert.
Yeah. They used that to stop the Mogu who were coming over. Because this was before everything got blown up. Back then, the Mogu could walk straight over to Uldum. The Mogu were
actually
coming.
Basically, Lei Shen really wanted everything that was over there. So he marched an army. Was it Lei Shen? Yeah, Lei Shen.
Yeah, it was Lei
Shen.
He
marched an army over there to go take control of all of this stuff.
And
the
Tolvir
said, no.
Yeah.
This is how Lei Shen originally died.
Mm-hmm. And Tolvir couldn't fight him. Like, they didn't have the force to fight the Mogu. There were just too many of them. Because they had a creation forge over there. They had the engine of Nalak Shock. They were building more Mogu. So the Tolvir were like, all right, we'll use the Halls of Origination. So they reformatted it to direct the effect locally and they basically glassed their own kingdom to stop them from getting their hands on the halls. As a result, Deathwing had to go there physically. If Algolon had sent the reorigination signal, he could have overridden the lockout that the Tolvir put on, because he's a Constellar.
Yeah.
If he'd sent the message, it would have basically gone to an automated system, because that's what the Titans have, automated systems, and the signal would have been sent, and the Halls of Origination would have fired, and we'd all be dead. That's exactly why Deathwing wanted to go there, because he wanted to throw it manually. He couldn't get in. He did not have the ability to override the lockout.
He's not a Constellar.
Yeah, he couldn't even get the Tolvir to do it for him. They were like, no, we can't. We don't have the ability to override it. We just focused it. Yeah, we can't turn that thing on. So I believe Algolon would have been able to kill us all, because that's his job. He has the access directly. That's why when Loken died, it didn't just activate the Halls of Origination. It had to call Algolon. That's his job. So had Algolon sent the signal, it would have gone out automatically and it would have killed everybody. But without Algolon, you can't get it to happen unless you go there manually and just fire the bloody thing off. Because, and I don't know if he could have gotten it to affect the whole planet, because the Tolvir changed it so it fired locally. I don't know if Deathwing could have made it fire globally, but I'm pretty sure Algolon could have made it fire globally. Because, again, Constellar.
Do you think Yogg-Saron would have been totally cool had Algolon actually succeeded?
I think that was his whole job. That was his whole big. He wanted that to happen. Oh, yeah. Look at all the effort he went through to make it happen.
Yeah, that's true.
The whole thing.
The whole thing with perfect. Logan and the whole thing with everything else and corrupting everyone else.
Smart enough to get us to come in.
No better way to break free from a prison than to just blow the whole thing up.
Yeah, and he was smart enough to set Logan up through all that and then get some mortals nobody ever heard of to come in and kill the guy. But after Logan has brought him Thorim, so now he has all of the Watchers in one place to unlock the Celestial Planetarium to call Algolon in.
Basically, Logan outlived his usefulness, or rather, his one last task that was extremely useful was his own demise.
Yeah, Logan was even convinced, what you should do is you should totally set it up so that if you die, Algolon shows up. Oh, yeah, that would be a great idea.
Royal Payday asks in the chat channel, and this is a legit question. So how did the Tolvir survive?
They were basically mostly killed. If you look at the survivors they've got left, they don't have a lot of them left
down there.
Yeah. I think a lot of them actually, the ones that were in Encourage, appear to have taken it even harder. There's the ones that are on Garage, there's a few of them and they're all under the sway of the old gods.
Yeah.
Like Moam.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sane Tolvir left over there. And that's where most of the destructive effect took place is actually Silithus, which is just a nightmare. Whereas you look at Uldum is fairly livable. I mean, it's all sand and glass, but it's got oases and stuff. It's not like Silithus where the only thing there was this bloody Silithid and they erupted out afterwards.
Alex, do you have anything to comment on this?
No, other than I was never really under the impression that the Titans, because the question seems like they seem to think it's Titans were supposed to come back and do it manually. I always envisioned it as a giant death laser from space or something.
Yeah, I figured that it was he would send the signal out to space. The Titans would get the signal, look at it and go, oh, yep. That done messed itself up. Okay, go ahead and send the order, and then just push whatever big red button they had.
Or just going super sci-fi with it, it contacts a Titan satellite, and the satellite fires a laser beam and kills everybody.
That would. I do assume
it is something along those lines. Perhaps not an actual satellite, but I'm sure the Titans have automated procedures, and it would just activate them.
The Luna's a satellite. You heard it here. No. Okay.
It's the typical sci-fi
space station,
thing.
E-Luna.
All right.
It's the typical sci-fi thing where the ancients are all dead, but they're left behind this super sophisticated technology, and it's on autopilot, and it's causing trouble, and we mere mortals have to stop it.
In other words, it's a Halo game.
It's most sci-fi settings that become video games.
Well, there you go. All right. So moving on. Next email is from Sonoria. From Kel'Thuzad US, who says, hey Watchers, people in the queue started speculating about who the final boss of Legion is going to be, and I do think that it's about that time in the expansion where we should be starting to get our guesses in. So my question is this, if we take for granted that Sargeras himself is not the final boss of Legion, and that said boss is someone we already know, at least in name, who do you think it's going to be? I think, didn't we talk about this one on Lore Watch? I swear we talked about this one on Lore Watch.
I mean, it's obviously Nomi.
Nomi? Okay. What?
Yeah.
I think the Alex is making a joke.
Oh, yes. Okay. Anyway, who do you think it's going to be, Rossi?
We know that it's not Kil'jaeden unless Tomb of Sargeras is the last raid and then whatever we do in 7-3 isn't a raid, it's not Kil'jaeden. You know what I mean? Because they did that already and had Kil'jaeden be the end boss surprisingly at the end of Burning Crusade. So part of me thinks it's going to be Illidan. It's going to be surprise, it's Illidan at the end of
this.
Oh,
I know what this is. I answered this question in the queue over the weekend. That's what this is.
Oh, okay.
That's why this looks so familiar.
Okay.
I said that if it was going to be anything, I think the question was a little more directed in the queue that I answered, where they said if Sargeras was going to take someone to use as an avatar, who would they take? and I said Khadgar just because that made the most sense, logistically speaking, to me, particularly given what we learned about Khadgar, like what Kil Jaeden said about Khadgar in the whole Tomb of Sargeras audio short, where he was like, no, he could be useful. Don't do anything to him. Like, he ordered Gul'dan not to do anything to him. And then in the Khadgar Harbinger's short, the demon that he was talking to was like, oh yeah, okay, they were totally right about you. And I'm like, okay, so maybe they're lining something up here, but that would make sense to me. And then poor Dadgar would have to go out in like the worst way possible, but it would make sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that. I mean, but that's the thing, is they've set it up so that the most obvious guy is out. Like, his Kil Jaeden was the guy I thought it was going to be.
Kil Jaeden or Illidan, one or the other, and both of those are out.
You could still do Illidan. You could totally, like,
maybe,
have him.
Yeah.
You can have him do something like, you know, and now my plan to defeat the Legion, I will destroy all the worlds in the universe. Wait, what? Pardon me. We're not down with that one. It has to be done. No, okay, we're stopping him. But yeah, I think Illidan is most likely out because they've been going the whole, you know, they've been pushing.
I mean, the only other option is to just like, oh, surprise, Medivh is back. Like, the real Medivh is back. Here's what he's been doing. He's been hanging out with his best buddy, Sargeras, and now he's totally an avatar again, and it's just like Warcraft 2 again, and we're going to have to fight him and kill him, and Khadgar's going to have to do it again, only this time he takes all of Khadgar's old away and makes him really young. So Khadgar's just Benjamin Buttoning all over the Warcraft universe.
He's a baby at the end.
He's just an infant at the end of all of this. And then Jaina shows up and says, oh, I'm going to take care of you. And that's the end of the
episode. Oh, God, no. That's horrible. Why would you do that to Jaina?
It got terrible.
Do we have to assume that Sargeras himself is not the final boss? He could be.
He could be. I don't know. Is that your take?
I mean, sure. I don't see why he couldn't be.
Well, we're going to fight the avatar of Sargeras in Tomb.
We fight his old husk, then we fight the real one. He's like, I just got my body back. Time to fight you. And then we beat him up, and then he doesn't have a body again. And then he just goes back to being a ghost in the Twisting Nether until the next Legion expansion 10 years from now.
See, I think it would be a problem to fight him in his actual body, because his actual body... Remember the Deathwing fight where we're on his back, and it's kind of ridiculous because he's so much bigger than us? The fighting against Sargeras is we're on his toe. And his toe is the size of, like, you know, Kalimdor. So it's just like...
Yeah, but that would make the perfect raid. You fight his toe, and then you climb his leg hairs to get up to his knee, to fight his knee.
You realize that a single leg hair of Sargeras is, like, the width of a world tree.
Yeah,
probably.
And then we skip an area in the middle, and then we have to ascend to, like, his neck. And then finally, we poke him in the eye.
This is basically the end of Transformers the movie, where a Unicron shows up and is talking at us in the Orson Welles voice. That's what we're going to have happen if we end up having to fight Sargeras. We're going to have to go into his eye and start stabbing his brain repeatedly or something.
That's fine.
I don't know. I don't know. It is certainly possible we could fight Sargeras or some aspect of Sargeras. It might be cool if we go to Argus and the entire thing we do is completely new to us and it's nobody we've ever heard of. We haven't had a boss like that in a while. Like, I think even in vanilla, like the last couple of raids, we got C'Thun and Kel'Thuzad. Burning Crusade was all people we'd heard of before. Wrath obviously was the Lich King. Cataclysm was Deathwing. So it would be nice if, you know, going in, we didn't know anything and we weren't swerved like we were in Draenor. I mean, straight up, we were told who the end boss was going to be, and then it wasn't him.
Yeah.
They swerved us on that one. So I don't know. I would like it to not be something too super predictable, but I mean, if it has to be somebody, I would probably not mind it being Khadgar, although we kind of missed Khadgar.
What if to fight Sargeras, we just trick him into drinking a Noggenfogger elixir?
But what if he gets the float ability instead of the shrink?
Then we just
Or worse yet, what if he turns into a skeleton? Because then what are we supposed to do?
Actually, you know what happens is we have to get, like, instead of fighting him, we have to have a giant head that just appears and trains us to use special powers. And we go out into the desert and we, like, fight people. Like, the raid is basically us going out to fight people and get these giant robot monsters
to
work with us. And then the end fight is our giant robot monsters all join together and form, like, you know, I don't know, something. And, you know, we fight Sargeras for a while, but then we realize, like, when we get to like 35%, that we should have formed Blazing Sword way earlier. So we form that, and that's how we, you know, finally take Sargeras down for a while.
But he's not great.
He's not beaten. He just, you know, shrinks down a little bit and runs away.
There's lots of explosions from no particular area. They just happen.
And Goldar's in it.
Okay.
I support this.
All right. So we have one final question here, so let's just go ahead and answer that real quick. This is from Aetherness, who says, "Hello, Blizzard Watch Lords. I'm Aetherness from Maelstrom US. I've been reading the Chronicle Volume 2, and I'm a bit annoyed with all the retcons made in relation with Rise of the Horde. Instead of keeping all the quote-unquote lore changes and warlords specific to Alt Draenor, it seems they decided to bring a lot of those changes to the main Draenor timeline. How do you guys feel about this?" Can I go first on this? Is that okay?
Sure, right.
Yeah.
All right. I found nothing wrong with any of the retcons and or adjustments that they made in Chronicle 2. I was actually okay with pretty much every single last one of them because I think that they made sense. And the thing that you have to realize about Alt Draenor is that Alt Draenor is the real Draenor. It's the only difference between those two things, as Kairos pointed out. He said it's like blades of grass are different, but otherwise it's all pretty much the same. And we've been told that, like, through the entirety of Warlords of Draenor, we were told that the history in Draenor was pretty much, it was the same. It didn't matter which reality you were in. And that's why when Murad was telling the story of the different clans and things like that in the Warlords animated shorts, they were still applicable because that was still Draenor history. Maybe the Draenor that we went to looked a little different. Maybe there were a few situations that were a little different, but it was mostly the same. And as far as history goes, it was the same. I'm imagining that you're speaking of the whole Origins of Gul'dan thing, because that was probably the single biggest change. But I don't think that that was so much of a change. I think that in Rise of the Horde, you also have to look at the fact that Rise of the Horde was being told from the perspective of, who was it? Was it Drekthar that was telling that history to Thrall?
It was mostly Drekthar's view of it, yeah.
Yeah, it was his view of that history, and he didn't know what was going on with Gul'dan. He just knew what he saw. So a lot of what he told Thrall and a lot of what Thrall learned were these stories from people who had been there, and they didn't have the whole picture. Chronicle gives you kind of the whole picture. I think it did a really good job, though, of bringing all of this stuff in and kind of weaving it together in a united whole.
I'm going to just flat out say that it's not, there is no retcons. They don't retcon anything.
I don't, okay.
Retcon isn't the right word, because retroactive continuity is when they decide to put in new information that contradicts stuff that you had before. You want a retcon, the origins of the Draenei that we got in Burning Crusade, that was a retcon.
I want to say that they definitely retconned Garona's origins.
Here's the thing about
hers
that.
Changed a lot.
Hers changed, except I'm not sure it did. Because we don't
changed a lot, because a lot of the information that we had of how she was created, and keep in mind that she was created by Gul'dan originally. She was magically aged by Gul'dan originally. And in Chronicle 2, it's very specific. No, she's not. She's from a different place. Yes, she's a half-breed. She may or may not actually be Murad's niece. It really didn't make that clear. There was a lot of the information that was presented in the Warcraft comics that doesn't appear to be canon anymore, but I don't know if that's the case or not, and I don't think we'll know for sure until we get Chronicle Volume 3 or 4. But I'm not unhappy with any of these changes, because I think they really kind of elegantly wove everything together into this cohesive...
I'm going to be honest, the Garona stuff, if it goes the way it looks like it's going, might be a retcon if the person in question is the person in question. And I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't read it yet. But if you've seen the Warcraft movie, that's kind of felt like what they were hinting at with Garona.
I don't think so.
That's kind of what it felt like. And if we'll see what they do. I don't think so. Right now, they haven't said she is or isn't his niece. That has not been said. They didn't say it.
But the thing is, they talked about Murad's sister, and they mentioned her specifically. And then the time jump involved there didn't seem long enough for Garona to have come to be. So I'm not I'm not 100% on what's going on there. It still seems kind of iffy to me and kind of clouded to me. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I liked what they did in Chronicle 2. I do.
And throughout Warlord, both Warlords and the Warcraft movie, the stuff related to the orcs, I always kept getting this vibe that I was like, I think this is what they wished they had done with the orcs to begin with.
Yeah.
For example, degrossifying some of the things related to Garona. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of felt like they're doing this very intentionally, and I think they would have preferred if they did it this way to begin with. And it sounds like Chronicle is following that the places where they thought they would have preferred to do it this way to begin with, they have the opportunity to clarify and repair.
Yeah, there's certainly a certain amount of backing away from some of the more egregiously gross stuff that was in there before. Also, though, as far as Gul'dan is concerned, because I've had people come up to me and ask me about this, nothing here is a contradiction of Gul'dan that we had before.
No,
nothing.
It's not.
Because we never found out before how Gul'dan became Nurzul's apprentice.
Nobody knew.
We just
and
had
again,
him. He was
you know,
just there.
When you go back to Rise of the Horde, the way Rise of the Horde is presented is it's a story that Thrall has heard. And he doesn't have all of the pieces. Nobody has all of the pieces. Chronicle has all of the pieces because it's not a character in the story relaying anything. It's a flat encyclopedia of information. So
I mean,
there
you
know,
one
go.
Of the things too, one of the things too that we get in Chronicle that we didn't have before is a much bigger picture of ogre society.
Yeah.
Like, what were ogres like on Draenor? What was their society like? Why did it fall apart? What was the catalyst for it? What did the Red Pox come from? These are all things that happen in Chronicle that are not retcons, they're just explanations. And I honestly feel like the Garona one, I don't know. I didn't see it that way when I read it. I just thought they, you know, decided to go with a little bit more ambiguity. But I could see what you're saying. That's not how I read it.
It felt like there were entire swaths of the Warcraft comic series that have been kind of shoved to the side, not mentioned, and possibly don't exist. But we won't know until they catch up to that point in Chronicle.
I think, didn't BlizzCon last year, Frosty Abbey basically say the comic does not fit with the Warcraft universe in slightly different words?
He said what he said, somebody asked him about Madan and Madan being a guardian. And he said, Madan is not a guardian. That's not canon. And that's all he said. That's as far as he went with it. So that's what we were. He was like, there are other aspects of the comics that are correct, but Madan is not, he's not a guardian. So it was like they were waffling with it even then, and they weren't quite sure how much they were going to go ahead and, you know,
it never seemed
to
like
the
they ever
there.
Paid attention to the, it beyond like the first run of the comic. Was it the first run with Varian?
Yeah, the Varian stuff.
The Varian stuff that carried in. Everything after Varian, they were like, nah. And they never brought that into
the
game, any part of it.
There were little bits and pieces. Like Meryl Firestorm, I believe, is in the game
somewhere. Yeah, he's in.
And Murad, obviously, is in the game. There are other characters that were, you know, used in the game. Valyria's
in the
game. Well,
wasn't Murad in the game before the comic?
Murad
he's
was actually
cinematic.
he was the Draenei that was in the original Burning Crusade cinematic.
And
he was the one with
the
big
deck
book.
Of the airship in Wrath of the Lich.
Yeah, he is. But when he showed up, that was after the comic came out. Yeah. Right. And you know, maybe he wasn't intended to be the Draenei that was in the Burning Crusade cinematic. Maybe they just made a Draenei and then they said, that guy looks really cool. Let's make a story about him. Let's put it in the comic because it's there. We don't know how that actually worked out. It's just, everything post that whole Onyxia fight and everything seemed to be kind of, parts of it were probably right and parts of it probably weren't. Like the whole thing with Garrosh showing up with Thrall to that whole diplomatic summit, that seemed like it was something that was legit and actually happened. But the stuff with Garona, maybe, maybe not. The stuff with Madan, maybe, maybe not. We didn't know. And I don't think that we still have all of the answers for that. So I don't know. But Chronicle 2, it was actually really good. I enjoyed it. I don't know about you, Rossi, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I read it like the day that I downloaded it. I went burned through it. I was, I've actually like made notes about the Apexis Yeah. And the stuff and is revealed
for,
there.
For people who are asking, because I know that there have been a lot of questions about this. I know we're running over time here, so I'm just going to wrap this up. But for people who were asking about it, they were saying, we want some place where we can talk about Chronicle 2 spoilers and things like that. The next episode of Lore Watch will be recording on Sunday. That's going to be all Chronicle 2. So there will be your spot to discuss things in the comments if you want to at that point. We'll have that there for you. So it's coming. Just be patient. It's okay. And that wraps us up for emails. Sorry for going off on a ramble there, Rossi.
No, that's what we do.
Anyway, so yeah, that wraps us up for emails, and that also wraps us up for the show. And I'm sorry. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. If you have an email for the podcast, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with either Blizzard Watch or podcast in the subject line so we know it's for this show. I'm the host, Matthew Rossi. This has been the show. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we will be here next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.